16 years ago, almost to the day, Debbie and I spent a late Saturday evening witnessing something that nobody should have to witness. A preacher and his wife that we knew who lived in an adjoining county had a few teenage boys. One of them was 16 years old. His name was Ben. He went out on Saturday afternoon with a couple of friends, all good boys. Ben was a Christian. The kid driving the car, it was a Mustang, and the kid was known for, I might say, driving like Jehu, the son of Nimshi. Don't let your kids ride with somebody who drives like this. Just a few miles from the house, after they picked Ben up, the kid tried to make a turn way too fast, slammed up against a tree. Ben was rushed to the hospital, probably 75 miles away. When we got there, along with others visiting, I know it looked like it. I don't know if it's, I don't know the medical possibilities here, but his head looked like it was swollen probably twice the size. His head had slammed against the inside of a car window. I remember standing there in the doorway and his mom sitting on the bed, holding his hand, talking to him about all the memories they had together, the conversations they enjoyed, her and him playing basketball together, and other things, all the experiences, all the memories, all the things that only 16 years can give. He died at 11 o'clock that evening. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 2 through 6 says, "It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity." What are your plans for the next 6 months? What are your plans for the next year? Maybe the next 5 years. Is God first in those plans? Is your spiritual well-being the most important thing as you make those plans? Everybody here has suffered tragedies. Everybody here has suffered the loss of someone very dear to them. Tragedies and calamities have a powerful way of making people give consideration to what really matters in life. Many of us, I'm sure most of us here, remember 9/11, September 11. I recall then it was just a matter of weeks, perhaps, that it began to be forgotten in the minds of many. And some people just wanted it to go away, didn't want to talk about it anymore. Let's move on. We mortals tend to have short memories, especially when it comes to lessons that demand change, that demand self-discipline, that demand self-denial. Hopefully we can be the kind of people for whom such moments of awakening can benefit us for the rest of our lives. those are the wise, and the wise will take it to heart. Back in Genesis chapter 4, verses 1 through 12, the text says, Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and bore Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering. Here are two sons, don't know their ages, but they are of somewhat, certainly not infants, certainly not just young little boys, old enough to be offering sacrifices, old enough for them to have significant memories with their mother and father, loved by their mother and father. Abel, obviously a dearly loved young man, honorable, respectful man. Abel brought of the first thing of his flock and their fat. The Lord respected Abel and his offering, but, verse 5, he did not respect Cain and his offering, and Cain was very angry and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? If you do not do well, sin lies at the door. Its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose against Abel his brother and killed him. Lord said to Cain, where is Abel your brother? He said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? He said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. So now you are cursed from the earth, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you. A fugitive and a vagabond you shall be on the earth. I know this had to be extremely painful for Adam and Eve. We don't typically think about the pain they must have suffered over Cain. But I'm sure they did. The fact is, if their hearts were right, they probably suffered more over Cain than they did over Abel. Which would hurt more, to have a righteous, innocent child die, or to have one living a life in open rebellion to God who had just murdered his own brother? The one you know is safe. The other one is a tragedy. In 2 Samuel chapter 13, we looked at this, spent a little time with this a few weeks ago. I know it's a number of weeks ago. The account of Amnon and Tamar, Amnon raping his half-sister. We looked at that and how all that came to pass, the planning, the attack, what happened afterwards, and Amnon's brother and Tamar's brother found out about this because Tamar went to Absalom, the brother I'm speaking of, and Absalom determines in his heart at that point in time that he's going to murder his brother because of this. Beginning in verse 28, that Absalom arranged for a sheep shearing and invited the king's sons, we're told in verses 23 and 24. And David said, the king David said, this is too much of a burden for all of them to go down. Then he said, well, then let Amnon go. So David questions why, but he talks him into it. Verse 27, Absalom urged him, so he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, watch now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, When I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Do not be afraid. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and valiant. And so he did so, and Amnon was killed. And we're told that information came to David in verse 30, saying, Absalom has killed all the king's sons, and not one of them is left. Verse 31, the king arose, tore his garments, lay on the ground, and all his servants stood by him with their clothes torn. Then Jonadab, son of Shimeah, David's brother, answered and said, let not my lord suppose that they have killed all the young men, the king's sons, for only Amnon is dead. For by the command of Absalom, this has been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. Now therefore, let not my lord the king take this to heart, to think that all the king's sons are dead, for only Amnon is dead. I can only imagine the pain that this would have been, that David would have suffered over this tragedy. You go on down in verses 38 and 39, after this occurred, we're told that Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. And King David longed to go to Absalom, for he had been comforted concerning Amnon because he was dead. Well, that leads us right into the next account, the next five chapters. Chapter 14 and verse 1 says, so Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was concerned about Absalom. So he makes an arrangement with the lady, has her to go in and basically tell a parable, and then applies it to David and Absalom, and in order to get David to bring Absalom back to live in the land with them. Verses 23 and 24, it accomplished its purpose, and it says, so Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. The king said, let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face. So Absalom returned to his house, but did not see the king's face. Down in verse 28, we're told that Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem, but did not see the king's face. Down in 32 through 33, finally Absalom goes to Joab, more than goes to, but that's a different story if you want to read the verses in between. He has some of his servants to set his field on fire to get his attention. That got his attention, and Joab came and said, why did you do this? And Absalom said, verse 32, look, I sent to you saying, come here so that I may send you to the king to say, why have I come from Geshur? It would be better for me to still be there. Now therefore, let me see the king's face, but if there is any iniquity in me, let him execute me. I'm tired of this. I came to my homeland, and I'm not even allowed to see my father. So Joab went to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, his father David. Then the king David kissed Absalom. So all is well, right? All is well that ends well, except it doesn't end well. The very next verse, chapter 15 and verse 1, says, after this had happened, that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. He now has another plan, and he begins to execute it. Down in verse 6, it says, in this manner, Absalom acted toward all Israel who came to the king for judgment, winning the hearts of people. It says he stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And then verses 13 and 14, we're told, his plan was basically to overthrow his father and become king. Verse 13 and 14 says, a messenger came to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom. So David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, or else we shall not escape from Absalom. Make haste to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring disaster upon us and strike the city with the edge of the sword. Well, the battle, after two more chapters, 16 and 17, we go over to chapter 18. We're told basically a battle occurred. David numbered the people who were with him. Chapter 18, verse 1, set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. Verses 5 through 7, the king commanded Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, the three commanders of the three groups of his army. He said, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains orders concerning Absalom. So the people went out into the field of battle against Israel, and the battle was in the woods of Ephraim. The people of Israel were overthrown there before the servants of David, and a great slaughter of 20,000 men took place there that day. And you recall how Absalom had long hair. He gets hung up in a tree. Somebody comes and tells Joab that, and Joab says, "Did you kill him?" He said, "No, I would not raise my hand against the king's son." Well, Joab in verse 14 says, "I cannot linger with you. I don't have time to mess around with somebody like you." He took three spears in his hand, thrust them through Absalom's heart while he was still alive in the midst of the terebinth tree. David finds out about this in verses 31 through 33. We have a couple of messengers that make their way back to David. The second one comes and says, it was a Cushite, he came and he said, "There is good news, my lord the king, for the Lord has avenged you this day of all those who rose against you." The king said to the Cushite, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" The Cushite answered, "May the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise against you to do you harm, may they all be as that young man is." That's just a roundabout way of saying he's dead. Then the king was deeply moved, went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said thus, "O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place, O Absalom, my son, my son." The pain David must have suffered because of Amnon's death. The pain David must have suffered because of Absalom's death. Can you imagine how much David must have suffered because of thinking of how much his example, his own example, may have contributed to the behavior of these boys? Did you ever do something that your father did and maybe you weren't ready to do it and maybe you got hurt? You know the account of David and Bathsheba in 2 Samuel chapter 11, just a few chapters previous to this. He commits adultery with Bathsheba, has her husband murdered, executed, put to death. And then how Nathan, the prophet, comes to David, and in the conclusion of his comments, he says verses 9 through 12 of 2 Samuel 12, verses 9 through 12, "Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? You have killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword. You've taken his wife to be your wife. You've killed him with the sword of the people of Ammon. Now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up adversity against you from your own house. I will take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbor. He shall lie with your wives in the sight of this son. For you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel, before the sun and the eyes of all." David committed adultery. Amnon raped. Absalom took the concubines of David. David had Uriah put to death. Absalom killed his brother, Amnon. Amnon was put to death by Joab. Pain is a harsh teacher. But we are fools if we don't learn the lesson. What really matters? If you're looking for a title of the lesson, that's the lesson title. What really matters? When you or when a loved one is within moments of death, what really matters? When we lived in New Jersey, there was an individual there. I've spoken about him before, I recall. He was a detective. He's a good man. He was a member of the church, but he was not really, by his own admission, very devoted to spiritual things and to the Lord. A friend of his, about the same age, I think they were in their maybe late 40s. 50s close to the late 40s, right? Just kidding. His friend called him one day from Texas, I think, and that's where he was living at the time. I think they went to college together or something. And he had found out that he had cancer, and he only lived a couple of months. And so this man, his name was Lee, went and got himself checked, and he had cancer too, the same type of cancer. And it was caught early enough that they were able to deal with it. He made a major change in his life, as you can imagine. And one of the things I remember him saying specifically was how he used to fuss at his kids for just every little thing. And he said after that happened, he realized that a lot of things just didn't really matter that much. And he was a very different dad. You ever had moments of awakening like that? Where you look at life very differently. You look at life like maybe you should always look at life. When death is imminent, who really cares about money or status? Cars, what kind of car you drive, clothes, awards, how fast you can run, how high you can jump, how many musical instruments you can play, what kind of car you drive. It's not to say that some of those things don't matter. Some of those things are very fond memories. When the person is gone, those can be the best memories for those left behind. But when death is near, nobody will be wishing that they had won more awards, achieved more notoriety. When you're facing death, those are not going to be the things on your mind. You're not going to be thinking that you wish you'd spent more time at the mall, or more time at the office, or more time on social media, or watching various videos. Not to say that we shouldn't give our best to the things that we do and enjoy life to the fullest. But it is to say that when it comes down to those last breaths, all that will matter will be where do you stand with God? That's why they say there are no atheists in foxholes. And as I understand, that was originally stated in World War I, and it was said, there are no atheists in the trenches. In World War II, they said, there are no atheists in the foxholes. I invite you to turn with me to Luke chapter 16. Account here that's referred to as the account of the rich man and Lazarus. I'm going to read verses 19 through 31. That's the whole account. There was a certain man, Jesus tells us, there was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus received evil things, but now he is comforted and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. And he said, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. He said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. He said to him, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead. It's interesting, he didn't ask to for a lot of things. But oh, how differently the rich man would have lived if he could have gone back. He would have been interested in spiritual things. He would have given money to the poor. He would have lived life very differently. He would have made different choices. Right? Maybe. You ever had moments of awakening? No? Nobody's had moments of awakening? Just don't want to raise your hands. It's Sunday evening. I'm tired. Did you change completely, never to turn back? I recall back in 1981, 82, something like that. Debbie and I had just become Christians January 28th, 1981. I know it was around that time we didn't have children. Tara was born in 1984. Something had occurred. Seems like there was some kind of a milk. Was it milk? Do you remember this? She doesn't know. I didn't give her advance warning about this. Seems like there was some kind of poisoning, milk poisoning or something that was occurring. It was on the radio. She went over to her parents' house in the afternoon on that day. It was a Saturday, maybe. And I started getting some very serious stomach problems, painful. And I thought that I was dying and had good reason to think that. It was excruciating. And it was the same thing that everybody was talking about. So I managed to get a pencil and a paper. And I wrote a goodbye letter to Debbie. You can laugh now, but what if I died? You wouldn't know this story, would you? And I apologized for things. I apologized for several things. And, you know, the sad thing is that I was better within an hour. And the pitiful thing is she never saw the letter. I did tell... I told her about it. Do you remember that? I told her about it, but I couldn't bring myself to give it to her. Now, I will say that as the years passed by, I confessed and apologized for it. I didn't keep track of it, but I know that I did, and probably more. But that's just like us, isn't it? I hope I'm not the only one. Please. I'll do better. I take it back. I'm sorry. I'll treat you better. But then we get better. And so we just tend to go right on living the way that we lived. Like I said earlier, we tend to have short memories. Remember the several times that King Saul learned his lesson about trying to kill David? He would weep, say, I'm sorry, my son David, And then a short period of time later, he would be doing the same thing over again. How many times did the Israelites in the wilderness have to learn the same lesson again and again and again? How about through the book of Judges, again and again? How about throughout the period of the kingdom, united and divided? How about after the captivities? Where do you stop? You don't. We have short memories. Let us not make that mistake. Let us be wise and take to heart the things that matter in life, lest we be like fools. Let us have the wisdom to make all our decisions with eternity in mind. That is the battle that we face each day. Let's stand together and sing the song that's been chosen.